Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to All of It on WNYC. I'm Jenna Flanagan, sitting in for Allison Stewart today. My first guest is star of the sparkling and award-winning comedy, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Actor Rachel Brosnahan stars as Midge Maisel, the foul-mouthed funny lady making waves in the male-dominated world of comedy, all while navigating her personal life as a mother and daughter. The series was created by Amy Sherman Palladino and her husband, Dan Palladino. It already has 16 Emmy Awards, 3 Golden Globes, a Peabody Award, among others. As it heads into its third season, which premieres this Friday, December 6th, on Amazon Prime. The show's ensemble cast includes Maren Hinkle, Alex Borstein, Tony Shalhoub, Kevin Pollak, and Michael Zagan. The period drama comedy is set in the late 1950s and examines evolving family dynamics and gender roles, and features some spectacular and even enviable costumes, not to mention meticulously stylized late 1950s set designs. And today, Rachel Brosnahan joins me in the studio. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So this is finally season 3 of the show. One of the things that I always found so engaging about this show is just the way that it's written. Can you tell me a little bit about what it's like to just engage with that kind of dialogue?
It's been such a treat. I fell in love with the script from the very first page of the pilot, and it's like a constant exercise for your mouth.
It sounds like it.
But it feels like the verbal equivalent of eating a delicious dessert. It feels good to say these words. And we are just so in awe of the brilliant writing of Amy Sherman Palladino and Dan Palladino.
Well, you said that you fell in love with it from the very first pilot episode, but did you know that this show was going to be this kind of a success?
No. I don't think you can ever really know something like that. I thought the writing was brilliant. I would have given anything to play this part, but we've said so many times, the cast and I, that we've all been a part of shows that we love, that we're so proud to be a part of, that have never really found an audience. We're in the golden age of television, as they say. There's so much good TV out there, and so you never really know whether something you love is going to break through. So we feel so lucky that this has found an audience, and a much broader audience than we ever could have expected.
Well, is there anything in particular about the times and the season 3 where all of this is taking place that is particularly exciting? Because we've seen Midge go through so much already in just 2 seasons. Yeah. And yet, what's next for her?
Well, Midge's world continues to get bigger. She's on the road with Shai Baldwin. They're on tour. She and Susie go to Vegas and Miami, and there's a European leg of the tour off in the distant future. The world just keeps getting bigger, and it's not just Midge's world that keeps getting bigger, it's also everyone around her. So Abe and Rose are forging their own new paths. Abe quit his job in season 2. Rose went to Paris to rediscover herself. They're meeting new people. Joel is forging his own path. He's got dreams of opening his own club. And there's a whole cast of new characters that comes along with that. And you have the relationship between Susie and Sophie Lennon that was introduced last season. There's a lot of new amazing guest stars this season.
Yeah. But on a personal note for Midge, because it feels like this really is going to give her a chance, even though you're saying that her world is getting so much bigger, mm-hmm. there's still very much an internal personal journey that she's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. So at the end of season 2, Midge comes to the conclusion that in order to fully pursue this dream and have the kind of success she hopes to, that she can't in fact have it all, that she is going to have to choose between her ambitions and her personal life, and she chooses her ambitions. She believes that after seeing Lenny Bruce perform his very famous All Alone set, that she is going to have to be all alone on the next leg of this journey. And that's something that she'll grapple with this season. But I do think coming to that conclusion has enabled her to to take that step off the diving board. There's no more wishy-washiness. She's all in 100%, and that gives her a renewed sense of confidence heading into season three.
Now, that's one of the things about this show that I find so genius, is that here you have this story that's set in the late 1950s, mm-hmm. Early 60s eventually, and of course, it's a very different time from the times we live in now, yet the decisions that Midge is faced with feel very real and very now.
Absolutely. Women have been expected to have it all, or at least give the illusion of having it all.
Well, we've got something to perform.
That's exactly right. As far back as we can remember it, it's certainly something that women are still faced with today. That's something we hear from a lot of fans of the show, that they've felt empowered watching Midge move through those very same difficulties and expectations from the world around her.
Well, how do you think that Midge in the 1950s versus women now, like, is it something that's so very different, or is it something that's still much more current, I guess, and much more tangible? It seems like something that's set in such a far off time almost.
Yeah.
Should feel so much more distant, yet it doesn't.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. I think we've come so far in so many ways, and decisions like the ones that Midge is grappling with, and managing the expectations of everyone in her life and society at large around her, highlight that we've not quite come as far as we might hope, that we still have some work to do.
Well, let's turn a little bit to women in comedy, because when I first heard that this show was going to be debuting, I immediately thought, I'll say I had a comic in mind, but
who was the comic that you had in mind?
I absolutely had the great late Joan Rivers in mind, but which I'm sure you've heard numerous times.
Absolutely.
But was there anyone in particular that you drew from their life experience or inspiration from when you were researching or getting ready to play this role?
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't immediately jump to Joan Rivers. That does seem like the most logical conclusion. But I started, I literally got on the Google and started looking up, I think I Googled who was the first female comedian. And one of the names that came up was somebody that I hadn't heard of and wasn't familiar with, a woman named Jean Carroll. And I started, and she was much earlier than she was in the 1950s. In 1955 was I think the earliest I could find material from her, but I found some clips on YouTube, some incredible clips of Jean Carroll performing, and she was beautiful and incredibly feminine, and she wore these beautiful dresses and a string of pearls around her neck, and had her hair in a very coiffed updo, and she was sharp as a tack and spoke at a million miles a minute. And one of the things that I loved about Jean Carroll that ultimately became the foundation for Midge's comedy for me is that she never waited for an audience to catch up with her. I felt like she knew exactly how brilliant she was, and she knew how tight her set was, and she would just drop jokes left and right and hope that the audience caught them. And there's a brilliant clip where the audience didn't catch a joke that she dropped so casually, and she just goes, "Come on, come on, come on." You know, she snaps her fingers and says the joke again, and then waits for them to laugh and moves on. And I just love the way that she moved and spoke and how powerful she felt on stage.
Well, when you were in the role of Midge, I'm wondering, are there any particular ingredients or perhaps rapid-fire delivery that you find in her that you might be seeing in other comics from either present day or before?
I think the idea on the show is that Midge is unlike any other comic, and it's hard today to be doing anything for the first time, it feels like. But in the 1950s, a woman like Midge doing comedy in the more stream of consciousness, conversational style was kind of unheard of. We were still moving out of a more vaudevillian style of comedy, more like the Sophie Lennon character that you see in the show, where, you know, everybody had to have a gimmick, especially if you were a woman. I don't think there's anyone who exists today that that you could compare Midge to exactly, but I also watched a lot of Ali Wong in prep for the show, watched her Baby Cobra special many, many times over. I felt like the kinds of jokes she was telling and her style and how brash and raw she is felt familiar and like something I wanted to draw from, or at least study very closely in the creation of Midge.
In the working on this series, are you at all, are there any points where you are surprised or shocked at the way, the difference in the way the men as comics were treated as opposed to Midge?
I don't think there's any woman moving through the world who's surprised by that. But I do love the way it's depicted on the show. I love the really micro moments that Amy and Dan write in. You know, there's a line in the first episode of the third season, which every time I hear it, feels very shocking, but is absolutely true to the time, and is just a quick moment that passes by. But a gentleman who introduces Midge says something like, you know, we have this new lady comic, and she's very beautiful, and trust me, the view is fantastic, you know, and sort of motions to his chest, and you're just like, oh my God, he just introduced her like that. But that was a perfectly acceptable way for men to relate to women at the time.
Well, speaking of the way men relate to women at the time, so Midge, of course, is this incredibly hyper-feminine woman who's moving in this very masculine world of comedy.
Yeah.
And she, of course, is accompanied by Susie, who seems to be the complete opposite.
Yeah.
First of all, just tell me a little bit about the dynamic of the relationship of those two characters, because they seem like they should not get along at all.
Absolutely. They shouldn't. There's a world in which they never would have met. But they complete each other. They are probably my favorite relationship on the show. Alex and I lovingly call it a womance. You know, people talk about bromances all the time, but we don't talk about what that looks like between two women as often. And they love each other very much. They make absolutely no sense, and yet their chemistry is there. They share a common goal. Mm-hmm. They are both deeply invested in Midge's success. No one, certainly more than Susie. It really is do or die for her.
Also, just the nature of the way that while, you know, Midge is sort of introduced as, you know, this woman who you're going to love the view, Susie, on the other hand, is constantly referred to as Sir. As never really people not even acknowledging or realizing that she's a woman. I'm wondering, when you two are sort of playing off of each other and off of the other actors, does that allow for any space for any sort of, like, I don't know if I want to say inside jokes, but like just sort of special little moments between the two of you that might not exist with anyone else because you're very bonded on screen?
The actors, you mean, or the characters?
Yeah, the actors. And
yeah, Alex and I are very similar to Midge and Susie that way. We're so different and we make absolutely no sense, but there's so much mutual love and respect. I trust Alex more than most people I've known for many, many years. I know that when we're working together, Alex will tell me if something's terrible, if I should do it again, in the most loving way, because she wants me to succeed. I would do the same. And I think she's brilliant on and off screen. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met. And not unlike Susie, you know, Alex can present with a tough exterior, but she's so thoughtful and generous and kind. I'm so happy that we unexpectedly crossed paths. And I think certainly some of our real life relationship bleeds on screen.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Rachel Brosnahan. I'm Jenna Flanagan, filling in for Allison Stewart. This is All of It. Yeah. I'm Jenna Flanagan, sitting in for Allison Stewart. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm joined now by Rachel Brosnahan. We all know her as the marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime. So I want to continue our conversation because one of the things that I and so many women are in love with, aside from Midge, is her wardrobe. Oh. Tell me about the woman who does your costumes, and just, do you have any say in any of this fabulousness?
I don't want to say. Donna Zakowska has this covered in spades. I wouldn't even know what to say. I'm stunned into silence every time I walk into a fitting for the show. There are inspiration photos tacked all over the mirrors. There are what seems like 1,000 pairs of shoes lining the walls. Beautiful fabrics everywhere and shapes. And I say it every year, but just when I think that Donna couldn't possibly outdo herself, she does it again. This season, the hats alone, I mean, they're extraordinary. The shapes, I've never seen anything like it. I love being around Donna while her brain is working at a million miles a minute.
Oh.
I never knew there were so many shades of pink. Donna's a master storyteller. I could talk about her all day. She teaches us things about the characters through the way that they're expressing themselves in their clothes. And I'm so inspired by her. But this season, Donna talked a lot about what it would mean. You know, Midge has often been described as someone who starts everything with an accessory. And Donna and I spoke a lot about what it would be like to take Midge on the road. What does Vegas look like? We go to Vegas this season. Mm-hmm. And what does Miami look like? And how are they different from each other? And how does that affect Midge's performance uniform that has kind of emerged, these black dresses? I never knew there could be so many different black dresses. I could talk about Donna for the rest of my life.
Oh, well, of course, the obvious question is, have you been able to perhaps permanently borrow any of the dresses from the set? Or do any of them reside in your closet?
Well, those dresses are fitted within an inch of my life, and I am corseted within an inch of my life. So I don't know if I could fit into any of them without that contraption under the dress.
Okay, this is completely off topic, but for those of us who like to breathe, that is probably the best thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy breathing as well. No, the corset is not really meant to make me smaller. It's really only, it's only there to change the shape of my body into more of a 1950s silhouette. So
of course,
I have kind of a high waist, and the corset is there to lower my waist so that we can create that beautiful long-waisted silhouette that was so fashionable in the 1950s. But I may or may not have one coat.
Okay.
And dreams of more.
All right. We'll leave it at that. I do want to turn to a little bit more of a serious subject, and that, of course, is the issue of race and how that plays out. Now, all of this is taking place in what is still a segregated America.
Yes.
And so we see Midge get ready to, or get invited to go on the road with a pop superstar who's African-American. Mm-hmm. How does that issue come up for her at all, the segregation, the separation, and yet her being an opening act for this particular artist?
Yeah, so I've asked Amy over the years, as Midge has been confronted with people from different backgrounds and different circumstances than her, how Midge responds. It made sense to me that Midge may have some deep-seated racist tendencies, you know, given the time that she grew up in and how narrow her worldview was. Mm-hmm. Amy has kind of always said to me that Midge is ignorant in a blissful way, and she just kind of says yes to everything and everyone, which has kind of been the way that Midge has always moved through the world. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't necessarily realize that anyone around her, whether it be Susie or her parents or people that are different from her that she meets, have struggles that she might not understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that being the way that Midge has always moved through the world obviously won't serve her as well when she's introduced to more and more people who have very different experiences of the world. I don't want to give too much away about the season, but it definitely
is
something.
Somehow, something's acknowledged. It sounds.
Yeah,
like.
I don't know I don't know how you could avoid it entirely. You're exactly correct. We are living at this time in a segregated America.
Mm-hmm.
Shai Baldwin, given his position, also moves through the world a little bit differently than some others that Midge may encounter. He's a megastar who's managed to cross through different demographics, But there will certainly be some other people that, that Midge runs into on the road.
Well, without giving too much away, I think it's fair to say that someone Midge might run into is Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah.
The actor joins the show. I understand you had a big part in that.
Well, I'm not. I would like to think I had the only part in this, but the accounts are conflicting. I'm not entirely sure. I think Amy and Dan and I met Sterling at a very similar time, and I'm, as is everyone on the planet, I think, a giant, giant Sterling K. Brown fan, and had been asked a lot on the red carpet, you know, if I could have anyone on the show, who would it be? And I had recently met Sterling and was already such a huge fan and just was putting it out into the ether to anyone who would listen. And got asked about it repeatedly. You know, people were following up with me about whether or not I'd had any success. And I made a joke. I said something like, you know, we're still in negotiations on that. And it got picked up as a headline. You know, Sterling K. Brown in negotiations. And I was like, oh, God, fuck you, shoot. You know, and I found Amy and Dan. I was like, I'm so sorry about that. It was a joke. And, it, you know, it's now become a thing. And Dan looked at me and said, oh, no, Sterling is in negotiations.
Oh, my goodness.
Be on the show. And I was like, what? Was that me or you? Either way, it doesn't matter. Sterling K. Brown joined us this season, mm-hmm. and he was everything that we could have dreamed of and more. You get to see a totally different side of Sterling on the show, and I can't wait for people to meet his character.
Of course. Of course, he's not the only guest star that mm-hmm. we get to see. There are numerous guest stars who will be joining the show, another reason to tune in. But I also want to turn now and talk a little bit about parenting, because we do get to see in season three Midge as the, I guess, what would have been the rare occasion in the 1950s, the working mom.
Yeah.
Who so many women, I think, circa now, can completely identify with.
Yes.
And how does she navigate that?
Well, Midge is extraordinarily privileged, and she has a ton of help. She has, you know, the children have four loving grandparents. She has a husband who is not only interested in being involved, but as we move into season three, is actually willing to take over the role of primary caregiver, which for the time is pretty unheard of. And they also have a Zelda. They have neighbors who seem to be able to watch the children at the drop of a hat. And that certainly helps a ton. And a lot of women today don't have those same kinds of privileges. But I have been so constantly surprised by the amount of mom shaming that I've been made aware of this fictional character.
I was going to say that seems like a good way to describe it.
Yeah, it's a as someone who I'm not a mother myself. I have many friends who are mothers and obviously have heard horror stories of, mm-hmm. of terrible mom shaming and have seen how much it affects them and how deeply upsetting it can be. And I've just been so surprised. You know, I was asked in an interview whether or not I thought that Midge loved her children. And
wow,
I was so surprised. And Alex Borstein was sitting next to me and very rightfully turned to the interviewer and said, I'm not at home with my children right now. Do I love them?
Wow. Well, it's nice that that Midge still has allies in,
yeah.
in the 20th and 21st centuries. I'm Jenna Flanagan, filling in for Allison Stewart on All of It. And I'm speaking with Rachel Brosnahan, otherwise known as the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I also want to talk a little bit about the way the show is shot, because it's just, again, so beautifully done.
Yeah.
And there's so many scenes where it feels as if the camera is just seamlessly moving with you, as if there's no edits. This was all one take.
There are many, many scenes that are in fact shot that way. If Amy and Dan had their way, every scene would be a oneer. I think they only ever shoot pieces of coverage, what's called coverage, to edit just in case there's a piece of the oneer that they want to use from one take versus another. It feels often like we're shooting theater without very much rehearsal. but some of the camera work on the show just blows me away. Our Steadicam operator, Jim McConkie, has pulled off some feats of camera work that I've never seen before.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that it's almost like doing a play, because your background, first, I want to give a little bit of your resume here. You're a graduate of New York University's Tisch School of the Arts, and you're much more accustomed to doing stage work. You were recently in Sam Gold's Othello at New York Theatre Workshop.
Yeah.
So how does that translate to working on the set of Miss Maisel?
It helps enormously. So many of us are theater actors originally, and on stage you have to understand how to perform with your entire body. And most of this show shoots us head to toe. We almost never come in for very tight close-ups like many other shows and films do. It's just a stylistic choice. It's the way that Amy and Dan.
Now I'm just realizing as you're saying that now,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, you're right.
We don't. And so it's so important that we're aware of our whole bodies all the time. It's been a great foundation of training for all of us. And it feels strange sometimes to utilize those skills on camera, but it's fun.
Well, is there something about, because of course, you know, Othello is not a comedy.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
No, definitely
no,
not.
But taking some of your stage work experience and being able to translate that, because I've heard so many actors talk about how much more difficult comedy is than people think.
It's the hardest thing. I had never done it really before this show, and I bow down to comedic actors. It's so difficult. But it is obviously still the best comedy is based in some kind of truth. And that's what I keep going back to when I'm having a hard time. But it's also, while the stage work has really helped, it's also totally different. I thought intellectually it would help more with the stand-up sets. You know, I'm on a stage and I'm performing in front of an audience, which is something that I'm accustomed to. But I suppose that on stage, I'm always pretending like the audience isn't there. You know, you don't break that wall. And doing stand-up, even the faux stand-up that I do on the show, you have to be interacting with the audience. You have to be listening to their feedback and responding accordingly. And that's a totally different skill that Midge and I have learned simultaneously.
Do you have any more plans to do any more stage work in your future?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, have a little something in the works. We'll see if it comes together, but definitely I miss it very much.
Well, when it comes to things that you and Midge have learned simultaneously, for actors who have worked or who have lived with, as I've heard it described, with a character for a few years now, how much of a melding of the two has there been? How much of Midge now lives in you that you carry with you?
Oh, man, I catch myself sometimes when I'm nervous, slipping into some Midge speed and some much more terrible jokes, and trying to will that same confidence from somewhere. I think I was so afraid all the time when I was trying to craft this character that it's weirdly become a habit that when I'm afraid, I feel like I accidentally sometimes slip into pieces of that. It's very weird, and I should really try not to do that. But I do think you carry bits of characters that have been a really significant part of your life with you forever. I've learned something important from every character that I've had the privilege of staying with for a time, whether it be a couple of months in a play, for example, or a couple of years, even on and off, like working on House of Cards. I was there for 3 years, and I think in a positive way, bits and pieces of those characters come with you.
Is there, and again, without giving away any spoilers, but is there anything in particular, a particular scene or a moment that you'd want viewers to really pay attention to when they're watching this third season?
Probably the camera work. I mean, I hesitate to say that because you also don't want people to see the camera work. It should feel
still,
like it's
when you
just
brought it
happening
up, yeah.
And it's beautiful. But I think it wasn't something that I saw very often before working on this show. And there are a few shots that are just extraordinary. And whenever my personal embargo is lifted on this, I want to post a behind-the-scenes video of one of these shots being shot, but there is a shot in season 3 that involves a camera on a crane that goes underwater and a lot of crew members running in and out just outside of the frame with various props and materials. And it's just so special. And it looks amazing on screen, but knowing what went into it, I think, makes it even more special.
My guest has been Rachel Brosnahan. She stars in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime. Season 3 premieres Friday, December 6th. I'm Jenna Flanagan, filling in for Allison Stewart. This is All of It. We'll be right back after a quick break. ¶¶